Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Coin Review on this 23rd of March 2013 as we discuss the world of sports. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald. You can hit me. You can also get to me on Facebook at facebook.com/TheRealQuinn. Busy program as we go 90 minutes talking about the world of sports. We, of course, begin with the madness that is March and another early exit for the Georgetown Hoyas. The Georgetown Hoyas go down last night to, that school that you probably didn't hear of coming into this tournament, Florida Gulf Coast University. 78-68, seventh time in NCAA tournament history that a number two seed has taken out a number 15 seed. Georgetown, again, since 2007, has done nothing in the NCAA tournament. 2007, of course, that year they went to the Final Four. They went to the Final Four, led by, of course, Jeff Green and Roy Hibbert and that crew. But ever since that, they've done nothing in the NCAA tournament. They haven't gotten past the second round. One, they made a NIT appearance in one of the years. And, you have to question, do they have the right coach moving forward? I mean, we got to be honest about that. I understand. I already know what the D.C. sentiment is going to be. D.C. sentiment is going to be, JT3 is untouchable because of who his father is. But I don't feel that way because all I can do is go by the results. And, again, in the last six NCAA tournament appearances, the results have been mediocre. You lose to a team, and I understand they beat Miami way back when, without Durant Scott, by the way, who's one of the best players. So let's keep that in mind before we go crazy. It was early in the season in which a lot of upsets happened. And two, it was, again, without Durant Scott, who is one of Miami's best players. So let's keep that in mind before we say, we knew Florida Gulf Coast was this good. No, you didn't. Nobody knew how good of a team they are. And frankly, this is a program in Florida Gulf Coast that just started basketball, last year. This program was only 2 years old. Two. Not 20, not 40, 2 years old. They play in a gym that seats about 4,500 people. They play in the Atlantic Sun Conference. They have a pretty good team. I mean, they have some athletes. They got up and down the floor. Georgetown was never able to slow the game down. But there's no excuse for Georgetown losing to Florida Gulf to this team. And not only did they lose to this team, this was a thorough beating. This wasn't one of those miracle shots at the end or, a situation where they stole the game at the end. This was, Georgetown had to come back to make the score respectable. Okay, Georgetown was down by as many as 19 points at one time in this game. And again, this has become a recurring theme with the Georgetown Hoyas in the NCAA tournament. They lose to double-digit seeds, double-digit teams, and they lose by a lot. and they're down. They've been down by double digits in every one of their tournament losses since 2007 at one point. And again, they've had some bad losses. I'm not going to knock them for 2008 losing to Davidson, because we know what Davidson ended up becoming, Davidson with Stephen Curry. But you lose to Ohio in 2010. You lose to North Carolina State. VCU, again, went to the Final Four. Can't go too crazy about that one. They beat Kansas that same year. So I'm not going crazy about that one. But again, NC State, Ohio, and now Florida Gulf Coast. Florida Gulf Coast. There's no excuses for these losses. Now, is Georgetown at a level where, you know, a bad year for them is not getting to the Final Four, or not making it to the Elite Eight, or not going to the National Championship? No. You know, that's the North Carolinas, the Dukes, the UCLAs, the Kentuckys. That's what those programs are on that level. Georgetown's not quite on that level. But Georgetown is on a level to where you should, number one, expect to get to the NCAA tournament every year. And number two, in more years than not, expect to get to the elite, to at least the Sweet 16. They are on that level. And they do get that kind of talent. And I want to hear all of a sudden, well, they really wasn't expected to get there. They wasn't predicted to finish in the top five or six in the Big East. They surprised people. I don't care. The team I watched over the course of the year was one of the best teams in the country. The team I watched over the course of the year had arguably the best player in the country. The team I watched over the course of the year won the Big East regular season. And we all know the Big East is one of the top two or three conferences in the country. And probably this year probably was the second best conference behind the Big Ten. And I don't go by the RPIs. And I go by the eye test, my eye test. That's what I go by, what I see night in and night out. There's no excuse for Georgetown to lose to this team. And again, I'm not taking anything away from Florida Gulf Coast. They played a great game. They were loose. They're athletic. They had a lot of personality, good coach. And, you know, 25 and 10. It's not like they were 17 and 12. 25 and 10, 24 and 10 coming into the game, had a good record and had a very good year and had a very good season that continues on. But Georgetown, to me, the story is how Georgetown lost this game and why does Georgetown continuously struggle in the postseason. When you come from a conference, that should prepare you for the postseason. The Big East, you play against all kinds of styles. You play against teams that can slow you down. You play against teams that want to run. You play against teams that play that will zone you up. You play against teams that will go straight man-to-man. You play against teams that will change defenses up on a dime. You play against teams that will want to trap you. I mean, you see every style known to man in the Big East Conference. That's the advantage. That's the beauty and the advantage of playing in what was the Big East Conference. That will be no more. But you should be prepared for everything going into the NCAA tournament. So I have to point at the coach. You know, I have to point at the coach. He came in, took over for Craig Esherick, took a couple years to get his players in. But 2006, they go to the Sweet 16, lose to the eventual champion Florida, and actually gave Florida – play Florida, that were going to win back-to-back championships, it's the toughest game in that two-year run, only losing to them by 4 points. Following year, you get to the Final Four, you had that great win over North Carolina down in the second half, win, blow them out in overtime. Ever since that, and you think the program is headed towards possibly winning a championship in the next couple of years, or making it to another Final Four in the next couple of years. But ever since that, it has been all downhill for Georgetown. I mean, let's be honest. I understand who his father is. His father was a legendary coach. Father won a championship, went to a couple Final Fours, and had a great run here. Built a program, which you certainly can't take away from. But again, John Thompson III has to take some major heat for how his team has performed in these tournament games. I mean, that's all there is to it. He's not immune, just like Dean Smith wasn't immune, just like Roy Williams wasn't immune, just like John Calipari wasn't immune. But the difference is those coaches receive criticism for not winning the big one. At least they, I mean, and again, not to sit up here and be a North Carolina homer, but, you know, there was a point in Dean Smith's career where he went to 14 straight elite Sweet 16s, which is unheard of. So it's a different day in college basketball. Players leaving early, one and done. But this program is better than how they're performing. These teams are much better than how they're performing in the postseason. That's all there is to it. Those other coaches I just mentioned got criticized for not winning championships in their first, you know, 10 to 15 years on the job. But they were making it to Final Fours. They were going to Sweet 16s. They were losing in the Elite Eights. They weren't losing in the first and second rounds for the most part. Now, I know Roy Williams had a couple losses in the first round, but for the most part, Roy Williams has lived in the Elite Eight, Sweet 16, and the Final Fours. Georgetown can't get out the first weekend in recent memory. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review on this 23rd of March 2013, 347-215-6180. Is your call number. Georgetown fans, I want to hear from you. Do you think moving forward, John Thompson III is the man for this job? I want to hear from you. 347-215-6180. When we return, we'll have Saturday's headlines, that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. After the 12 o'clock hour on this special edition, this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, VCU and Michigan going at it right now in the first game of the fourth round action, round of 32. I put it to you that way. Of course, both one of these teams will be the first team to get into the Sweet 16. VCU has weathered the early storm. Michigan got off to a fast start, but now VCU trails just by 3-20-17 into Michigan, which amounts basically for Michigan basically a home game for Michigan in front of Auburn Hills and at the Palace of Auburn Hills in Detroit, but in Auburn Hills. But again, if the closer this game stays, I like VCU in this game. If this game can stay close, and I think it will, so should be a good game that goes right down to the wire. VCU is of course a very good team coming out the Atlantic 10. An Atlantic 10 that, frankly, has played great throughout the course of this tournament, 6-0 to start out the tournament. And you want to know why the Atlantic 10 has gotten off to this fast start to the NCAA tournament. They schedule their non-conference schedule. They go out there and play teams. I mean, Butler plays Indiana. You see Temple play Duke every year, and teams like Kansas. Temple's non-conference schedule is famous. They have been famous for playing a great non-conference schedule. They go out and play people. They play people. That's why they have good RPIs. That's why they were able to get five teams in the tournament this year. And that's why they have no fear of any team in the country. because they've seen the best of the best. So, you know, when you go out there and when you play people, it, you know, allows you to see different styles and different styles of the teams around the country, and of course, besides benefiting your RPI and those all those stat numbers that the NCAA tournament committee likes. And again, you can tell the teams that go out there and schedule to play people versus the teams that don't play anybody. But VCU right now trails by 5. We will keep you updated on that game as day five. As I forgot about the first four, day five of the NCAA tournament kicks off. The other big upset yesterday, and again, it was one of the, you know, there have been three major upsets in this NCAA tournament so far. You had Harvard against New Mexico on Thursday, and you had Harvard New Mexico on Thursday. And last night, and of course, you had the two big ones yesterday with Florida Gulf Coast over Georgetown, and also LaSalle beating Wisconsin. The Florida Gulf Coast has been the upset of the tournament, but I did not see LaSalle Wisconsin. I didn't see that coming. I thought Wisconsin coming out again. The Big Ten, keep your eye on the Big Ten. I mean, the Big Ten. Somebody brought up, I heard a stat last night that, you know, blew me away, and that I did not realize to be true. As great as the Big Ten has been this year, remember, the Big Ten has won national championship in the last 23 years. One. Think about that for a second. One national championship in the last 23 years since 1991. Or since 1990. The ACC alone has about 5. I mean, I know Duke has 4. I know North Carolina has 3. Well, excuse me. ACC alone has about 9. You have 7 between Duke and North Carolina and Maryland. So ACC has 8 by themselves in that time span. One national championship in the last 23 years. And that was, of course, Michigan in 2000. So Big Ten is going to be on display during the course of this tournament. Certainly, this Michigan win could go a long way in helping the Big Ten have a successful tournament. But again, LaSalle, Wisconsin did not see that coming. Again, LaSalle, the shocking thing about that was a game that LaSalle controlled from basically start to finish. I mean, Wisconsin had to come back to make the score respectable. And LaSalle had a big lead at halftime. So they go out there, and they after having played on Wednesday, they go out there yesterday and take out a Wisconsin team that had been playing as well as any team in the country down the stretch, have been certainly one of the hottest Big Ten teams coming down the stretch. I know they had a loss to Ohio State, but you know, couldn't make shots. And what you've noticed about these teams and about the NCAA tournament up until this point is these lower seeded teams, the quote unquote underdogs, have no fear whatsoever. I mean, zero fear of the big dogs. They don't. I mean, you see Gonzaga almost lose. New Mexico's out. You see Kansas last night, who didn't play well, but Kansas did not play well. I guess a 16 seed. All right. Duke only won by 12 points against Albany. And then you see the athleticism of some of these teams take effect in these games. I mean, that was one of the reasons why Georgetown lost yesterday. Iowa State against Notre Dame. I mean, Big East turned Big East. Nobody thought that much about the Big 12 this year, but Iowa State is one of the most athletic teams in the country. They ran, you know, they basically ran Notre Dame off the floor. So you're seeing fearlessness out of the lower seeded teams, and athleticism be paramount. In in some of these in determining some of these scores. When we return, we will have the Cyril Quinn headlines of the morning, and also we'll go into some NFL rule changes as well. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Minutes after the 12 o'clock hour, as Michigan has stretched out the lead, its lead to 8 here. VCU having a tough time scoring. VCU, as they just scored right now, 25-19 Michigan. If you're VCU, you just want to keep this within a couple of possessions, because I've seen Michigan down the stretch of these close games get tight, you know, make careless mistakes. If you're VCU, you just want to keep this thing close. VCU is going to have a stretch where they're going to make some threes. That's all there is to it. They're an excellent three-point shooting team. They're going to have a hot stretch as they turn Michigan over, and it was something that they do as well as anybody in the country. They were not able to convert that, but just want to weather the storm. If you're VCU, you're playing in a hostile environment. Michigan basically only 40 miles away from their campus. Auburn Hills is. Certainly and definitely is a Michigan crowd without question. VCU had gotten off to a bit of a slow start. They looked kind of, you know, a little raggedy here, not, you know, in terms of only made one out of their last 11 shots. But again, 6 points is nothing. And again, I've watched Michigan over the course of the season get sloppy. And I mean sloppy down the stretch of some of these games that have cost them a couple of victories. So we'll see what happens with that. Right now, 25-19, Michigan on top of VCU. The point guard, Burke, looks relatively healthy. Of course, he had the back injury, had a sore back from the first round game that they played, and we'll see how he looks over the course of the game. Cyril, quick headlines, Saturday headlines of the day. USA Soccer defeats Costa Rica 1-0 in what basically was a blizzard. Against Costa Rica in a qualifier for the World Cup qualifier that the USA absolutely had to have. If, you know, I'm trying, you know, flipping through channels as I watch the NCAA tournament, and I knew the game was taking place, that USA would have to play a qualifier match. So I flip on the channel, and I'm like, where's the field? Like, I couldn't believe that they were actually playing soccer in the middle of a snowstorm. I mean, the commentators claim that they can still see the lines on the soccer field. I couldn't see anything but the goalposts and the ball and the players. I couldn't see any lines on the soccer field. I couldn't see the field. Unless they started making white soccer fields, I could not see the field whatsoever. So Costa Rica has 24 hours to file a protest. I don't understand the logic of playing a soccer game early March, I mean late March in Colorado. I don't understand playing a soccer game in the state of Colorado. There are 50 states in the United States, even with the Florida, California. I mean, there are plenty of warm weather states. I know what the weather hasn't switched because it's springtime, because it's spring now, and in some of these states, in D.C. in particular, how cold it's been this week. But, man, I mean, you have Miami, you have California, you have Arizona. There are plenty of warm weather states that you could have chosen a site for, chosen for to play this game. It doesn't make any sense. Colorado? It snows in Colorado year-round, basically. I don't understand what, you know, who made this decision. I don't get it. It makes zero sense. And Costa Rica has every right, as they won nothing, they have every right to be picked, to be ticked off about having to play this game in a snowstorm. Soccer's not made to be playing in snow. It's one thing playing if it were raining. You don't play soccer in the snow. Come on. You play football in the snow. You can play hockey a little bit in the snow if you want to, depending on how much snow. But, you know, you don't play soccer in the snow. Pittsburgh Penguins extend their NHL winning streak to 11 games. Pittsburgh 24-8 on the season. They take out the New York Islanders 4-2. This is how you win 11 straight games, and this is a real streak as a comparison to Chicago Chicago Blackhawks, who, you know, had that streak in terms of them losing, and they were losing shootouts, and they lost three shootouts. In this streak, Pittsburgh has not only won 11 straight games, they had one shootout that they won 5-4. So this is a legit winning streak that they have going here. Pittsburgh has two interesting games coming up. They have Philadelphia at home to Philadelphia tomorrow night. Philadelphia is struggling this year, but they somehow find a way to play their best hockey against Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh will play another hot team that's had a great season so far, the Montreal Canadiens, who are right on the heels of Pittsburgh in terms of total points in the Eastern Conference. Pittsburgh has 48 total points, Montreal has 45. So two interesting games coming up in the next couple of days for Pittsburgh. You want to know how you win 11 straight games? Well, when you're number one in goals per game and number two in the power play percentage, that's how you have an 11-game winning streak, and that's why Pittsburgh is certainly one of the handful of teams that can win a Stanley Cup come June. So keep your eyes on the Pittsburgh Penguins. They are chilling the rest of the NHL right now. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will have some entertainment news, a changing of the guard in the late night rotation. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Here on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Michigan has pulled away from VCU. They've stretched the lead out to 13. VCU needs a basket as they get a basket, 32-21. VCU needs to have this thing under 10 going to halftime. Michigan playing well. Michigan, you know, a lot of people like this matchup for Michigan considering that they have guards. They have a lot of good, have some good guards that can handle the VCU pressure, and that's certainly with Burke, Hardaway, and Hardaway Jr. That certainly has been the case so far up until this point. And VCU has not made any threes. So Michigan right now having their way with VCU. 32-21, Trey Burke at the free throw line. We'll see if VCU can get back into this with about a minute 56 left in the first half. Michigan up 33-21 in the round of 32 game. Winner of this course will go to the Sweet 16. Trey Burke's playing pretty well. He looks healthy, which is the most important thing if you're a Michigan fan. And if you're a Michigan fan considering that that fall he had in the Michigan's second round game or first game of the tournament. But again, VCU needs to make some threes. They need to make, if they're not going to turn you over, they need to make some threes at the least bit. They had not been able to do that, had not really been able to turn Michigan over. Michigan has handled the VCU pressure very well as of up until this point. Entertainment news, Jay Leno is going to be out as the late night host after his contract is up next year, the 2013-2014 television season. He's going to be replaced by Jimmy Fallon as Michigan's going up by 15 now with about 118 left. He's going to be replaced by Jimmy Fallon, and, you know, that's entertainment. We see guys, legendary guys, get replaced all the time. But normally, we don't see them get replaced when they are still at the top of the industry. Leno gets better ratings than Letterman, Kimball, any late night host. I mean, in his time slot, Letterman is still number one. But I think that, and it's, you know, it's been reported that NBC is fearful that Jimmy Kimball is about to take over the young audience. And Jimmy Kimball, when ABC moved his time slot to 11:35, he began to start taking some of the Jay Leno's viewers from him. Now, not enough to where, you know, he changes, you know, but not enough to where he hurts Leno or keeps Leno from being number one, but just enough. Just enough to scare NBC into already thinking about a plan for the future. I mean, NBC, you know, I mean, and here's the thing. This is why Leno is replaced. It's wants to be replaced. David Letterman is going to retire soon. It could be next year. It could be year after. David Letterman is going to be gone soon. So NBC is fearful that if that happens, then they will snatch, CBS will snatch Jimmy Fallon up to be the heir apparent, and a job that Jimmy Fallon will take in a heartbeat. So if you're NBC, you're saying to yourself, listen, we'll kick Leno out a year earlier so that we can guarantee that we can keep Jimmy Fallon, and Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel being around the same age will go toe-to-toe for the young viewership. So to me, this is not anti-Jay Leno. This is about, to me, pro-Jimmy Fallon. This is how much they think of Jimmy Fallon to keep him. And then who would have thought, you know, 10 years ago, this guy was making a song called I'm an Idiot. Now he's going to be one of the most highest paid entertainers, and he's going to be one of the highest paid entertainers on television. But if you're Jay Leno, you have a right to be pissed off if you're Jay Leno. You're like, hey, I'm still number one. I've been number one forever now. You know, if your ratings are slipping and you slip to number two, or that's one thing. But you're still winning championships. You know, it's like the Bulls. It's like NBC is Jerry Reinsdorf, and Jay Leno is Michael Jordan's Scottie Pippen. Like, let somebody take it away from us before you take it away from us. Let somebody go out there and beat us. We're still the three-time defending champions here. So, you know, you understand why Jay Leno would be annoyed by that decision, but it's going to happen after the next television season, 2013-2014 season. Second time in as many weeks that Argo is going to be sued by a country that did not like how they were depicted in the Academy Award-winning film. A couple weeks ago, it was Iran suing Hollywood. This week, it's going to be New Zealand suing Hollywood. Now, keep this in mind. Both these countries, Iran and New Zealand, claimed that the events were fictional, but the events that were claimed to be fictional were based on a true story. These events actually happened. And I'm looking at it, and you're wondering, you know, if all these other countries from outside the United States hate Argo so much, why has Argo made so much money? Argo has made $92 million internationally, $1 million in New Zealand. And New Zealand is not the biggest country in the world, as we all know. In North America, Argo made $135 million. Now, the last time I checked, Canada was a part of North America. Last time I checked. I mean, let it go. Let it go. It's a movie. It came out. Yes, did Ben Affleck have every single fact? No. Did he have to dramatize some for the film and to sell some tickets? Of course. That's Hollywood. But the majority of the stuff, the meat of the stuff that was in that movie was true. Was based off true stories. It was based off stories that people told. It was pretty, and frankly, from all reports that you hear, it was pretty accurate. Seven minutes after the 1 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Silver Quick Review. When we return, we'll talk some NBA. Two teams streaking east to west. Which streak will end first? We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Silver Quick Review. We'll be right back. Not 10 minutes after the 1 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. 347-215-6180 is your call number. The poll question of the afternoon is, which remaining double-digit seed is the most dangerous? Of course, you have Harvard, you have Iowa State, you have Harvard, Iowa State, Florida Gulf Coast, all remaining left in the tournament. Oregon, you have left in the tournament. As Michigan's up 38-23 at halftime over VCU. VCU needs a big time comeback in order to get back into this game. So yeah, I mean, you have Harvard, Oregon, Iowa State, Minnesota remaining left in this tournament, all as double-digit seeds. All as double-digit seeds. Harvard, Florida Gulf Coast, of course, had the major upsets, and LaSalle as well. So, about five double-digit seeds remaining left in the tournament. Which one of those teams is the most dangerous and has the most best chance to move on to the Sweet 16 is the poll question of the afternoon. NBA here. NBA, we're going to a little NBA now. The Miami Heat get win number 25 in a row as they toy with Detroit 103-89. I know Detroit had a lead early in the first half, but that game was in Miami. You never thought that Detroit was ever going to win this game. They cruise 103-89, big second half for Miami. LeBron goes for 28, 29, 9, and 8. Streak again up to 25. Next three games, Miami has Charlotte at Orlando, at Chicago. Then they'll go at New Orleans. Then they'll be at San Antonio. I'm guessing either at Chicago or at San Antonio where the streak ends. I feel it'll either end at 28 or at 30. Originally, when this thing got to about 19, I thought it was end at 28. But keep in mind, that Orlando game on Monday, they play Charlotte, I believe, tomorrow, and then they have Charlotte and Orlando back-to-back. The Orlando game will not be an easy game. Orlando has played Miami tough this year. They have no fear of, as bad as Orlando is, they, for whatever reason, have no fear of Miami. Vucevic, the Orlando big man, has had some monster games against Miami inside. One game he was like had 24 points and 29 rebounds. They had a 1-point loss to Miami, a 2-point loss at home to Miami, and a 1-point loss a 2-point loss in overtime to loss to Miami, and a 1-point loss in the last time they played Miami in Miami, and a game that Orlando frankly got robbed. I mean, let's be honest, they got an offensive foul called that should not have been on Tobias Harris. That was a joke of a call, and Miami was fortunate to win that particular game. So that Orlando game should be very interesting on Monday. Chicago, we have Chicago later this week. Next Saturday at San Antonio. Very interesting to see how Eric Spoelstra will navigate the streak. I think in a perfect world, if you're Eric Spoelstra, if you're a Miami fan, you want to get the record at 34 and then kind of settle things in, kind of not shut it down, but kind of start peeling back minutes and start getting ready for the postseason. You cannot allow this streak to lessen your chances of winning an NBA championship. Because the greater the streak is, let's say they don't lose a game for the rest of the season. I don't think you want to go into the playoffs having won, about 40 games in a row. You go out there and do that and don't win a championship, it is a utter disaster. So, to me, if I'm Eric Spoelstra, if and when we get the record at 34, I'm going to almost shut it down, so to speak, and kind of start, not sitting players, but start cutting minutes back on LeBron, Wade, Bosh, getting him primed for the playoffs, having my rotation set, things of that nature. He's already cut the rotation. Even now, the rotation probably is, they have a set rotation in terms of that the rotation has been cut basically to 8 players. But I am not going to jeopardize a championship. And Mississippi is one of those double-digit seeds as well. I forgot to mention Mississippi, which took out Wisconsin, and LaSalle took out Kansas State. I'm not going to allow this streak to sacrifice a championship. Now, different sport, but in terms of what happened with New England, but NFL was a one-shot thing in terms of the playoffs. But again, I thought the pressure of that streak got to the Patriots and it helped, you know, not cost them Super Bowl, but contributed to them not winning a Super Bowl. But again, different sports. But again, I'm not going to allow a streak to dictate what my postseason is going to look like. Another team in the Western Conference that's streaking right now that would be the top news if not for Miami is Denver Nuggets. Denver Nuggets, and to me, again, Miami streak is what it is, 25 games. Denver's at 14. But to do what Denver's doing in the Western Conference is almost impossible to have a streak that long in the Western Conference considering the level of competition that you're playing. We all know that the Eastern Conference is a joke, and Miami has feasted on these Eastern Conference teams. They've won 18 straight against Eastern Conference opponents. Denver has won 14 straight. Denver now has skyrocketed to third in the Western Conference, playing just off-the-charts basketball, had a great win this week against Oklahoma City, at Oklahoma City, impressive win there. They were very fortunate to beat the Sixers, were down by 5 points, like in the last, 20 seconds or something just crazy. The last minute of that game, they were down by 5 points. It might even the last 15 seconds. But they were able to end the game on a 6-0 run to steal that game against the Sixers, which had them beat. So now Denver will be Sacramento, at New Orleans, at San Antonio, home to the Nets, at Utah, home to Houston, at San Antonio. This streak will end in the next week or so. They're not going to beat San Antonio twice. It's not going to happen. So either at 17 or 21, this streak will end. And of course, it could end at Utah. It could end against Houston. So this streak, if they get to 20, they'll be fortunate to get to 20 with this streak. But certainly, I would like them to beat Sacramento and New Orleans to get to 16. But regardless, this has been a tremendous streak for the Denver Nuggets, a team that has no superstars. They have a bunch of very good players. They play a fast pace, lead the league in rebounding, are one of the top scoring teams in the league, points in the paint. They're one of the best in points in the paint. They are a tremendous offensive team. And they will be a very interesting team to watch come playoff time. Lakers fall to Washington Wizards 103-100. This is why you can't trust the Lakers in a big time spot come playoff time. They don't guard anybody. In a game where you have Kobe Bryant and Paul Gasol coming back from injury, you're at home, you're coming off an embarrassing loss to the Phoenix Suns by 23 points. And I don't care who's hurt, you should never lose to the Phoenix Suns by 20 plus points. And the fact that you had 3 days off and you still find a way to lose. So a Wizards team that's not god-awful. Okay, John Wall, Wizards, I think, are 19-15 with John Wall back in the lineup. John Wall quietly is having an excellent season. Had a big-time game last night, 24-16 assists. Made big free throws, made big plays to help the Wizards win. The Wizards have played well against playoff-caliber teams. They have 13 wins against teams that are currently in the playoffs right now, if the season were to end, they would be in the playoffs. So Wizards are they're still a bad team, but they've picked off some good teams this year. But still, if you're Lakers, you're trying to make the playoffs, you're trying to move up in the Western Conference standings, you can't lose to the Washington Wizards at home with 3 days off, coming off a 23-point loss to Phoenix Suns. And again, it's why you cannot take the Lakers serious come postseason time. Mike D'Antoni blasts the players saying inexcusable and doesn't understand how it could happen. It happens because you play no defense and you don't teach any defense. That's why it happens. When you have a big-time lead, when you have a double-digit lead at home, a good defensive team, you don't blow it. A good defensive team sauced that game away. 15-point lead, 18-point lead at home, that game should be over against anybody, let alone the Washington Wizards. So these are what the Lakers are. It's not going to change with Mike D'Antoni at the helm. So if you're a Lakers fan, you might as well get used to those types of games under Mike D'Antoni. Andrew Bynum is going to be done for the year. He's going to have surgery on both knees, and you wonder if Andrew Bynum will ever play basketball again. Andrew Bynum, you know, they're guys who whose body recovers differently, whose body reacts differently to injuries. In various sports, you see what happened to Adrian Peterson, thinking that he was supposed to be out for at least part of this year. He comes back and has one of the great, great running back seasons of all time, a great season of all time for a running back. Well, everybody is not Adrian Peterson, and Andrew Bynum is the polar opposite of Adrian Peterson. Andrew Bynum has been injury prone since he stepped into the NBA. Even in high school, he was injury prone. He was injury prone coming into, but even before he was in the NBA. I don't know about, certainly we don't know about Andrew Bynum's motivation to come back. And again, if you're the Sixers, you cut your losses. You gave up a lot to go get him in that trade, which they absolutely should have made, okay? But you cut your losses and you move on. You move on. You know, sometimes it happens. There's no way you can give Andrew Bynum a long-term contract. There's no way. So it's an easy decision for the Sixers to move on and go about rebuilding their franchise. That's all there is to it. But again, there are major question marks on whether Andrew Bynum will ever play basketball again. And the sad part about it is he's still only 25 years old. 22 minutes after the 1 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Halftime of the VCU-Michigan game. VCU is down a bunch, 38-23. Michigan playing well. VCU cannot make a three and cannot turn Michigan over. You have some, we'll talk more about the NCAA tournament, about some of the matchups today and tomorrow as well. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll get into some NFL, a bunch of changes in Baltimore, and some player safety is also coming out for next year. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back.
My friend, still appointed to me. They keep trying to tell me, all you want to do is kill me. And I'm sure brother, if you only knew you wish that you were in my shoes. You just keep on using me.
Welcome back to this latest edition of the Serial Queen Review on this 23rd of March 2013, 347-215-6180. It's your call number. HBO is going to do a movie Sunday, tomorrow night. I forgot to mention this, on Phil Spector, played by Al Pacino. Helen Mirren is also going to be in it. I've not heard great reviews on it, and some of the reviews that I've read in various outlets. It'll be very interesting to watch, though, to see which part of Phil Spector's life they discuss. I'm guessing that it's going to be, as VCU finally VCU cuts the league down to 13 now, I'm guessing that they're not going to deal too much, that they're going to deal with the events that led up to Phil Spector and him accused of murder, that they're kind of shy away from that and not go heavy into that. So I'm guessing they're going to give you how Phil Spector became Phil Spector with all the hair and all that other nonsense. So we are interested to watch. Again, Al Pacino is Al Pacino. So I'm sure, you know, it's Al Pacino. So yeah, I'm sure that he'll do an excellent job with playing the role. Should it have been made? I don't know if it should have been made or not. Helen Mirren, again, another acting heavyweight, legendary career. You know, so you have, the talent is there in the movie, but again, it's one of those movies that, you know, it might be too soon to do a movie on Phil Spector, to be honest with you. So we'll see what happens. We'll see, you know, how that turns out. Game of Thrones begins next Sunday. We will talk more about that and how season 3, we'll talk more about that next week as you go into the most important season of the show, season 3. So we'll have some stuff on that next week as well. Before we get to some of these rule changes in the NFL, I just want to say it is a disgrace, a absolute disgrace that the NFL is going to have the Baltimore Ravens start their season on the road. You're telling me that you could not convince Major League Baseball to push back, move up the time of the Orioles game against the White Sox on September 5th to an afternoon game? You're telling me you couldn't push and move that up to like 1 o'clock or 3 o'clock? I mean, come on. I don't get it. What reservations would baseball have about that? Now, again, would the Orioles like it? Night game after day game after night? Probably not. But the flip side is, you know, if you have a day game after night game, you have like a 2 o'clock game or a 3 o'clock game on Thursday, then you don't have to come back and play on Friday until Friday night. So that you make up that rest. Now, I understand it will probably be more than likely in a pennant race in September. Let's just assume that Baltimore is in the race to win the AL East this year. But again, no Super Bowl champion in the last 10 years has begun the season on the road. I mean, part of being a Super Bowl champion is celebrating, you know, other than the parade, is being able to kick off and open the NFL season in your home stadium and kind of conclude the celebration of being Super Bowl champions in that particular game. Now, apparently Baltimore is not that annoyed by it. The Raven organization is not that annoyed by it because they'd much rather open on the road on a Thursday than open on at home on a Sunday night because of the fact that they will get, you know, you open on the road on a Thursday, you'll get an extra three days off or 2.5 days off before your next game, which basically is a bye week. It's an extra bye week. So they want that. They want that. They rather have that. They rather sacrifice not opening up at home than give up that, basically that extra bye week, which is understandable. This is understandable from their perspective. But from an NFL perspective, I mean, it just looks bad that the defending Super Bowl champion opens up their season on the road when you've had this tradition that has worked to me in the last 10 years of them opening up at home. And I don't understand why the NFL was not able to convince Major League Baseball to have the Orioles play their night game, and push it and move it up to a daytime game. To be moved up to play, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, or whatever. I don't get it. 1 o'clock. I mean, baseball players play day games all the time. It's nothing new. Baseball players play day games all the time on Thursdays because Thursday in baseball is considered to be a getaway day. So, this is one of those things to me that the NFL should have been able to fix, but looks like it's not going to happen. Baltimore continues to lose players off their Super Bowl team, particularly on the defensive end. You can add Ed Reed to that list. Bernard Pollard, Ray Lewis retires, Darnell Ellaby, Kerry Williams, Paul Kruger. So they've lost now 6 starters off that Super Bowl winning team. And listen, their defense is not the reason why they won the Super Bowl. So that's the good news. That's the good news, is that their defense is not why they won the Super Bowl. The bad news is, I think they should sign Ed Reed myself. I think in today's NFL, which is a passing league, having a ball hawking safety to me is almost as important as having a pass rusher. Not as important, but almost as important of having a pass rusher that can get to the quarterback. One of the reasons why quarterbacks and wide receivers are feasting on NFL defenses in today's game is the fact that there are not 5 quality free safeties in the NFL today. I mean, that's all there is to it. There are not that many quality free safeties. I mean, you go, look at what happened to Denver in the playoffs against Baltimore. So to me, the value of an Ed Reed is twice what it was when he came into the league because of the state of the NFL football right now. It's a passing league. That's all there is to it. It's a passing league. And Ed Reed can still play. I mean, it's not like, listen, unless they think he's done physically, when he's on the field, he's still one of the top two or three safeties in football, easily. Easily. Great pickup for Houston, 3 years, $15 million, $5 million signing bonus. Now, that's not a lot of money for a guy that is an all-time great that can still play at a high level. NFL safety rule, a couple of safety rules the NFL made over the course of the week. The tuck rule, which to me came 11 years too late. The peel back blocks, to me, not a big deal. But the big one, of course, is with the running backs. Listen, if you're going to have the running backs get penalized for using the crown of their helmet into a defensive player, then you have to have that coin, that has to go both ways. That has to go both ways. You can't have a defensive player being able to use the crown of their helmet on a running back. Because from what the rules have been in previous years up until this point, a running back or even a quarterback, if they decide to run, is fair game to get hit head first once they become a running back or once they get outside the tackle box. So to me, I understand the NFL's going to the safety mode here and trying to protect their players, but they need to be consistent with that. Need to hold the defensive players accountable for using their helmets on running backs, as well as holding the running backs accountable for using the crown of their helmets against a defensive player. Three four seven two one five six one eight zero is your call number as we discuss the world of sports. VCU down by 16 to Michigan. Looks like, again, VCU has a, unless VCU starts making some threes, there's no way they can win this game. Unless they start making some threes. So they're going to have a tough time. They're going to have a brutal time coming back in this game. As Michigan, again, Michigan's playing well. Burke is playing well. 49-33, Michigan on top of VCU. When we return, we will look at some key games in this weekend's NCAA tournament action and preview tomorrow as well. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Review. Michigan on top of ECU 49-33, about 15 minutes left. Mitch McGarry having a big game. He's going to be a very good player. He's going to be a very he can't make a free throw to save his life, but he has a chance to be a good player in the up and coming years at Michigan. VCU needs to start making some threes if they want to get back into this game. They haven't been able to do that. Michigan has controlled this game from the start. One of Michigan's better performances of the year, or definitely within the last couple of months or so, as they did not finish the season strong at all coming down the stretch. Started off the season 20-0, but only ended up the season 6-6 in their last 12 games. But they're playing well here. Again, the tournament can be a game of matchups. VCU, pressure team, turn you over, shoot threes. Well, when you go up against a team that has excellent guards that can handle that pressure, that kind of neutralizes what you can do well, and then you're forced to do something else, and VCU cannot do anything else. I mean, VCU is not a team with sides. They're not a team that's good in the half court. They want to turn you over. They want to shoot threes in transition. If you can keep them out of transition, if you can contest their threes, they're going to have a hard time scoring, and that has been the case. That has been the case in this game. And VCU does not have any big men. So it's not like, you know, you get them in the half court, they can throw it to a big man and say, hey, go get us a bucket. It's not the case whatsoever. So Michigan has done an excellent job of neutralizing VCU's transition game and also, again, protecting the ball and keeping VCU from getting out in transition for those open three-point shots. Some good games today. After this one, you have Memphis against Michigan State. I like Michigan State big in that game. I know a lot. Memphis was fortunate to beat St. Mary's. So I don't think there'll be a problem whatsoever for Michigan State. Butler, Marquette later on. Oregon, St. Louis would be a very interesting game because I think Oregon is underrated and should obviously there's no way Oregon should have been a 12 seed. Pac-12 has played well so far in this tournament, minus UCLA, which got knocked out and beaten handily by Minnesota. Louisville take on Colorado State. I don't expect Louisville to have much trouble with that. Arizona, Harvard. Very interesting to see if Harvard can bounce back off that emotional upset to, you know, a lot of times these teams to beat Arizona, a lot of times these teams have an upset and then they're not able to come back down off that high. Very interesting to watch Harvard Harvard play Arizona coming off that major upset against New Mexico. And, of course, Sunday, there are three games that you should keep your eye on. Number one, of course, North Carolina and Kansas, which will be coming off at about 5:15 on Sunday. Listen, Kansas has the advantage. Well, Kansas is a better team, number one. It's the first, number one, Kansas is a better team. But they also have an advantage in terms of the size with Whitney. Whitney can hurt North Carolina. Because North Carolina does not have quality size this year for the first time, basically in about 15 years. North Carolina doesn't have a quality big man. But if Kansas allows North Carolina to hang around that game, North Carolina is more than capable of beating Kansas. I did not like how Kansas looked last night against Western Kentucky. Now, maybe you want to say, and we know how Kansas has had a history of struggling against these mid-majors. So maybe, you know, you want to say Kansas, you know, was rusty, or you want to say Kansas, you know, nerves being top seed, had an off night, maybe. But again, they cannot slip up against North Carolina. They cannot play. They must play better to beat a North Carolina team that's going to be loose, a North Carolina team that can make threes, and a North Carolina team that's coming off of a shaky performance in their own right against Villanova. I mean, North Carolina had a 20-point lead in that game and allowed Villanova to come back and take the lead before running away with it in the last 5 minutes or so. So another Roy versus Bill Self matchup. Bill Self has gotten the better of the other matchup so far since Roy Williams left Kansas to go to North Carolina, beat him in the Final Four in 2008, beat him handily at that. And last year, Kansas beat North Carolina in the Elite Eight. Now, mind you, that was without Kendall Marshall, so 80-67 to advance to the Final Four. So another Kansas-North Carolina matchup tomorrow. Minnesota and Florida should be an interesting game. Florida, Minnesota, now I like Florida to go a long way in this tournament, but Minnesota is not, similar to Oregon, Minnesota is not a number 11 seed team. They should have been lower. They've beaten some good teams in the Big Ten, this year. That'll be a very good game. Much more competitive than a normal 3 versus 11 would be. And, of course, the game that I'm looking forward to the most, Iowa State and Ohio State. I thought Iowa, so far to me, Iowa State has had the best performance of the tournament considering the competition they played against. They destroyed Notre Dame in that particular game as Michigan now is up by 19 points over VCU. There's no way that VCU is going to win this game. Iowa State, to me, is going to be a tough, dangerous team for Ohio State to deal with. They make threes. They're athletic. They're fearless. Now, remember, Iowa State played two games against Kansas that both went to overtime, and two games that frankly, they should have won. So they will have fear of Ohio State whatsoever. Ohio State has had when Ohio State has struggled this year, they've struggled to score in different spots over the course of the season. That will be a very good game. I think that will be a game that goes right down to the wire, to be honest with you. So those are the three games I think to look forward to on Sunday. Iowa State against Ohio State, Kansas, North Carolina, and Minnesota and Florida. When we return on this latest edition of the Silicon Review, we will look back at last night's colossal upset, Georgetown and Florida Gulf Coast. I don't even know their names. Florida Gulf Coast. we'll look back at that, and we'll look ahead at the future of Georgetown basketball as well. That's coming up next on the Silver Crown Review. We will be right back. Out of hand, there's nothing else to go to, and that's what. And again, this would have been the matchup that I would have picked to open up the Saturday for the round of 32. I mean, Michigan, VCU thought it was going to be a close game. Thought a lot of people liked VCU going to this tournament. So I have no problem with CBS picking this matchup, but sometimes you know you get burned, and like Michigan right now is destroying VCU. They're making every shot now up by 23 points. And there's nothing else to go to. See, later on, over the course of the day, there'll be a game where it's a blowout, and you will have at least two or three other options to go to on the million networks that this NCAA tournament is on, where, you know, True TV, TNT, TBS. So you'll have other options. Right now, you are stuck with this game until that 2:45 window, where you'll have some other options to go to. Over the course of later on today. But that's the only thing about the opening Saturday of the NCAA tournament. When it goes bad, like this game is going bad, there's nothing that you can do. Just basically grin and bear it and wait for the next game in the NCAA tournament. We began the program, of course, talking about one of the biggest upsets. The biggest upset of the tournament up to this point, Georgetown falling to Florida Gulf Coast University, a team that, you know, 78-68, Florida Gulf Coast was up by as many as 19 points during this game. Georgetown, you know, made a late run, started making some threes late, but you never got the sense that Georgetown was ever going to win this game. This is the seventh time that number 2 seed has beaten the number 15 seed. It happened twice last year. You had Missouri and Duke both lose in the second round, in the first second round of the NCAA tournament, their opening games of the NCAA tournament. Again, and in my opinion, everybody wants to praise Florida Gulf Coast now for this athletic team. Everybody wants to, you know, say, oh, we knew how good this team is. Nobody knew how good this team was going into this tournament. Now you want to hear people come out the woodworks. Well, I predicted it in my bracket. LeBron, of course, predicted it in his bracket. But whatever. listen, there's no way Georgetown should have lost to this team. This university, this basketball program just started last year, okay? This is only the second year of their program. First year going to the NCAA tournament, they play in a conference, the Atlantic Sun Conference. Again, there's no way that Georgetown should have lost this game. And not only did Georgetown lose this game, Georgetown got embarrassed. This was a thorough beatdown by a team, by a 15 seed. And again, Georgetown has made a habit in recent memory of getting embarrassed in these early round games. They haven't made it past the first week of the NCAA tournament since 2007 when they made the Final Four run with Jeff Green and Roy Hibbert and those guys. And ever since that, it's been either one and done, or it's either been, you know, win one game, lose the next. They haven't done anything. And you, again, coming out of a conference that has been one of the preeminent conferences in a lot, you know, particularly when they added Louisville and when they added Conference USA to the mix a couple of years back. I mean, the Big East, you know, you're playing against competition night in and night out. You're playing against different styles night in and night out. There's nothing that should shock you once you get to the NCAA tournament. Big East, you see great athletes. Big East, you see a great zone defense run by Syracuse. You see a slowdown 3-point shooting team like Notre Dame. You see an up-tempo team like Louisville. Big East, you see it all in the Big East. To me, I would think there should be a big time advantage coming out the Big East because you've seen all these different styles of basketball. Well, that has not helped Georgetown in the NCAA tournament. Now, they've lost to double digits, you know, since 2007. Every loss that they've had to a team in the NCAA tournament has been to a double digit seeded team. You know, I'll give them a pass on losing to Davidson. That team was better than anybody ever expected. Stephen Curry was the best player in the tournament that year in 2008. Okay, I'll give them a pass for that one. You lose to Ohio in 2010, inexcusable. You lose to NC State last year, inexcusable. I'll give them a pass in 2011, losing to VCU. VCU beat Kansas that year and had a great run in their own right, went to the Final Four. But some of these losses, you just have shaking your head. And I don't want to hear about people not expecting Georgetown to be that good this year in the first place. You know, that when you win 25 games, when you go 14-4 in the Big East, that goes out the window. Those preseason expectations go out the window when you have the type of regular season that Georgetown had. So you wonder now about the future of one John Thompson III at Georgetown. How many more first and second round how many more opening weekend losses is this university going to take, tolerate from a program that plays in one of the most preeminent conferences in the league, in the country, or formerly one of the most preeminent conferences in the country? Understanding the Big East is no more. The Big East as we know it is no more, or will be no more. And again, I don't care that John Thompson III. I don't care who his father it was. I don't. It has nothing to do with the product that you've seen out there in the past 6 years. I don't care that he's John Thompson's son. I really don't. If this were any other coach down in D.C. area, his head would be on the chopping block. You'd be ready to fire him. I mean, again, and let's be honest here, and I just thought about this. Gary Williams took criticism for the last 4 or 5 years of his career, and he had been to 2 Final Fours and won a championship. And you know what? The criticism was fair. He took criticism in terms of recruits, in terms of where the program was at. So if Gary Williams can get criticized for that, and John Thompson III is nowhere near the coach that Gary Williams was. Let's be as good. Now, again, I understand he made it to a Final Four and went to a Sweet 16 the year before, but he's not on Gary Williams' level as far as coaching. He's not. If Gary Williams can take that criticism, And we down here in the D.C. metro area can criticize Gary Williams, then John Thompson III should be susceptible to that same criticism, if not more. If not more. Because, frankly, John Thompson III is getting recruits that Gary, right now, that Gary Williams was not getting the last 4 or 5 years of his career at Maryland. Now, and then which you can criticize Gary Williams for, because he should have been getting better recruits. So this idea that John Thompson III is not open to criticism based on, you know, the fact that, you know, who his father is and what his father did for the program is a bunch of garbage. As Michigan lead has ballooned to 65-39. Gary Williams, I mean, John Thompson III deserves every bit of criticism that he's going to receive in the next couple of days and then some. And there's really no excuse for the way Georgetown has performed in the last 6 years in the NCAA tournament. There's no excuse for it. I mean, it's, again, you wonder, Georgetown, the recurring theme, there are two recurring themes in this run that they've had since they went to the Final Four. They lose to a team that's double digits in terms of the seed, and they lose to them badly. These games are not even close. That was a beatdown last night. I mean, Georgetown made a late run to have the game come to make the game look respectable. That was a thorough beatdown by Florida Gulf Coast. So again, you're wondering, is John Thompson III a guy that can get Georgetown back to the point to where they're in the Sweet 16, they're in the Elite Eight, they make an occasional Final Four? Is he that guy? Was the 2007 Final Four a fluke? Was it a fluke? Because that's what it's starting to look like, a fluke. Again, when you lose to Davidson in 2008, you can live with that. You come off a year with your heavy favorite. You ran to a buzzsaw in Stephen Curry. Come off a Final Four year, you can live with that. When you start losing, accumulating, when this is just happening year after year after year, you have to start asking yourself, why is it happening? One of the problems Georgetown has is, to me, they don't focus enough on offense, as far as I'm concerned. They don't score enough points. They're going to be amongst the best teams in the country defensively. We know they can play defense. But again, in big spots, you got to be able to put the ball, you have to be able to put the ball you have to be able to put the biscuit in the basket. I mean, your defense is not going to shut down everybody every night. And Charles Barkley was talking about this last night with these teams focusing so much on defense and not on offense. And he made a fair point. You know, you can survive a bad defensive night if you're able to score 80 points. And that's one of the reasons why North Carolina and Roy Williams has had so much success in the NCAA tournament. They can score points. They can score points. Look at the teams that are winning championships. Kentucky last year, they can score. UConn the year before, they can score. So that is going to be a question moving forward. Is John Thompson III the man to coach Georgetown and to lead the program moving along in the future? That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Tune into the next edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Enjoy the rest of your sports day. Enjoy the NCAA tournament. I will see you next time. Have a great, great Saturday. So long.